97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
We got Paul Morrow coming up here in just a little bit. We're going to talk a little about the Eric Adams case, which is fascinating. We're going to have to see how many more people are brought down in that investigation. In the next hour, Mr. Brian Kilmeade, who joins us usually once a week. Last week it was Friday, but we're going to visit with him this afternoon. Just reaction from last night and beyond. A couple of stories that I want to drop in here before we get to Sue's news. First of all, now I'm going to assume this is real. Ethan sent this to me, our new producer, Ethan Hannaford. And it's a video, an overhead video of someone in a street, I guess in Gaza, or at least somewhere close, that is completely taken out by one of the Iranian missiles that falls down on this dude's head. And it just flattens him. It falls out of the sky. There's people watching and recording. And then he's just, he dead, I think we can say. You said it didn't look real, Sue. I mean, it looks like a video game.
It does. But I realize
that it's pretty disturbing. So if you're going to watch it, be warned. It's disturbing.
I've watched it like 5 times. It's not quite as disturbing to me, apparently. And this is along the same lines, but just kind of weird. I don't know if you saw this story, Fred. It was a CBS story from this morning. An unexploded bomb from World War II, one of our bombs that had been buried at an airport in Japan, exploded yesterday, causing a large crater in a taxiway. And they had to cancel 80 flights. But believe it or not, no injuries. They say that there was no aircraft nearby. The investigation by the self-defense forces and police confirmed that there was a 500-pound U.S. bomb that exploded. They don't know exactly why it exploded, but there's video recordings of a nearby aviation school showing that the blast blew up pieces of asphalt into the air like a fountain and created a big hole in the ground as well. So it's bizarre. It's weird. It says that the officials say there's no threat of a second explosion, but they don't really go into detail here. I guess this was an airport that was built in 1943, and they say that Imperial Japanese Navy flight training took place there, and kamikaze pilots took off on suicide attack missions. And I guess we dropped bombs that have been unearthed in that area, and this was one of them. And it's happened before. Yikes. I think some of these
maybe
bombs have exploded
really
before.
Maybe it was a really long timer.
Right?
Yes. Let's set that for decades.
And then this guy is becoming a bit of a celebrity. Harold Daggett. He's the guy that runs the Longshoremen's Union. And he's very defiant. He's very boisterous. He's out there saying, look, this is what this is all about.
But they want to get rid of our jobs out of the United States. So that's why we're all fighting here. It's for jurisdiction, for health. It's for wages. It's for a whole bunch of stuff. And they don't want to come to the table and share. And that's why we're out here saying, you would never have this money if it wasn't for the unions up and down this coast to Houston fighting every day during COVID.
So one of the issues here, there's wages, there's benefits. One of the issues, believe it or not, is how much they can record workers that are on the job, like if there's cameras, et cetera. There's a dispute.
That's weird.
Yeah, I don't know all the particulars of that. But what I mentioned yesterday is certainly true. And I don't know how you get around this because this is where the world is going. But there's 63 ports in the world that have advanced automation. Now, there's 1,300 container terminals in the world. So, you know, that's a small number, 63 ports, but these are big ports too across the world. So automation is just kind of part of the evolution of this. I'm not suggesting that we displace American workers, but I don't know how they carve something in here that is going to be acceptable to both sides. So I'm hoping that they can work something out, because if they don't, this is going to be a big headache for the rest of us when it comes to, really everything is going to be affected. Everything. You're going to buy a car,
sure.
You're going to buy other products. You're building a house, which is already a pain in the ass. You won't be able to get things to build that house with. So all kinds of things that might be bad for the economy just in time for Christmas. Here's a little bit more with Harold.
Are you worried that this strike is going to hurt the everyday American, the farmers that need to reach the export market? They're telling me that they're going
to
hurt
them. Now you start to realize who the longshoremen are, right?
Nobody cares.
People never gave a shit about us until now, when they finally realized that the chain is being broke now. Cars won't come in. Food won't come in. Clothing won't come in. You know how many people depend on our jobs? Half the world. And it's time for them and time for Washington to put so much pressure on them to take care of us, because we took care of them, and we're here 135 years and brought them where they are today, and they don't want to share.
Harold, he has a little trouble showing his emotions, but he's pretty good union representative outside of that.
You know how much money he makes a year?
How much?
Politico checked out, $728,000.
Are you kidding me, Fred?
$728,000.
Okay. You know what? People are sharing with him.
He's been president of the ILA for more than 10 years.
Wow.
Earns a salary of $728,000.
Okay. Well, he's doing quite well. I don't think his benefits are going to be the ones that aren't. That is eye-opening. But in fairness, I mean, he's the guy that runs a union. I don't know how that compares to other people in those positions, but it's his rank and file that he seemingly is certainly trying to argue and fight for right now. Let's do this.
These allegations are deeply concerning.
Does the president have any comment?
We're not going to comment.
It's not clear messaging.
No. And now, Sue's News. Brought to you by Sue.
Big news, it's National Kale Day. Huh? Who doesn't love it?
Oreo loves kale. My bunny.
Of course.
That's his favorite. He never really turns down kale or cilantro. The mustard greens, a little iffy. You know, spinach, maybe. But kale, he loves.
That's kind of funny.
I know, it's weird.
There is a good kale salad. It's at Salt and Smoke. And you can put brisket on top. Brisket helps everything, Fred.
Amen.
I agree.
You know?
Wait, you put brisket on top of the kale, like that's your protein, you mean?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I like
you
that.
You add that, and it's really good.
Ooh, or you can just eat the brisket without that. The kale, too. There is that.
There is that.
Push it aside.
Support of that one, yeah.
On this day in history, I bring this up for my own father, although no longer with us. 65 years ago today, in 1959, Chevy debuted the Corvair. It was a rear-engine compact car. My dad had one and restored it. So it's kind of fun. You know, it was a thing for a while. What was the guy who hated them? Oh, he had a big stink about how they weren't safe.
Yeah, because it was controversial.
Yes, what the heck?
I don't remember all the particulars of that.
Anyway, that was 65 years ago today. And then, ooh, a little St. Louis history. 56 years ago today, in 1968, in the first game of the World Series, Bob Gibson struck out 17 Detroit Tigers, and the Cards won the game 4-0. It was a record. 17 Detroit Tigers.
One of the best seasons in baseball history. Bob Gibson changed pitching forever. They had to lower the baseball mound after that season because he was so good. It was just unfair to hitters.
That's really cool. And okay, this is the one with music. 43 years ago today, in 1981, I had this cassette, people. The Police released their fourth album, Ghost in the Machine.
Ah, this was the big one, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
I had this one too, Sue.
Did
cassette.
You? I love it.
I was never really a big cassette guy because I made my own cassettes, you know? I mean, I guess I was a cassette guy, but I didn't buy
Newsflash.
Well, okay. But in other words, I made my own mixtapes. Like, I was buying the Maxwell blank cassettes.
Sure.
I wasn't necessarily buying.
And where were you getting the songs to put
final.
On?
Final. Yeah, I would record them for my records. Okay. I would buy the records, and then I would record. So then I'd have something to listen to in the car. I mean, that was one of the. This is missing from the youths of America, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Because all you got to do is press a little button, Ethan, and your song goes right into your rotation. We used to have to record it in real time.
Well, you.
While walking up the hill in the snow
with
to school
feet.
And you guys, walking back up the hill back home.
You guys basically just spoken in. Entirely different language to me is kind of just like, okay, I'll just wait till we're on to the next thing.
But you're so spoiled with the technology. You have no idea.
No,
but
you know,
I will say this. I had fun doing that. It wasn't a chore.
No,
it was fun. Listening
yes.
to the music that I wanted to listen to and making cassettes and, you know, making mixtapes.
Yeah. Did I tell you my niece Sophie just did not know that there were antennas on radios until in Houston? And they were, you know, without electricity. My sister-in-law brought out a radio and plugged it in, and she put up the antenna, and my niece was like, What is that?
My guess would be my two adult children might have the same reaction.
Yes!
Honestly.
You know what's the crazy thing is someday kids are going to be saying, what, your phones couldn't talk to you?
Or right.
Is how much it's going to jump even 30 years from now.
Oh, you're right.
That scares me more than where we've come.
You are so right. I mean, that is just right around the corner. This kind of amused me today. People on social media are revealing the best Wi-Fi names they've seen their neighbors or friends use. You know, when you go into someone's house and you think, well, do they have Wi-Fi? And you pull up and all the kinds of lists come up.
We have one from our neighborhood where, and I've seen this before, where someone listed it like DEA. Like DEA1,
yes,
you know?
Yes, they have one that said FBI surveillance van.
Yeah, you know,
and just amusing themselves. But one of my other favorites was, Mom, this is the one. Click here. Or Grandma.
That's awesome.
This is it. Well, somebody put Al-Qaeda. Somebody put a pool urine monitoring system.
Oh.
I'm not even sure I understand what that means. And
I wonder if we can
someone else put the LAN before time. Get it? Your kids get off my LAN.
Nice.
If we would go right now, I wonder how much we have. Here, we love, what is a DAIQS? We love Dakes 1 and 2. That's because we're here at our building here, Park Pacific, is an apartment building. And there's one other that, well, now we have a school. It's like a charter school below us. But up above us is just apartments. So I'm trying to see if there's anything unique.
Yeah, anything good?
No, not really.
I'm not thinking in this building that the most creative people live in the condos.
Well, that's kind of mean.
Oh. Well, I just don't think, have you ever seen somebody, I don't know. It's just a guess.
She's just insulted hundreds of people who live at Park Pacific.
I'm sorry, all Park Pacific people, but am I right? I am
maybe.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And Fred found this story about Wawa. When I saw Wawa, I thought, what even is that? Well, Wawa is the number one convenience store chain. It came out on top of the American Customer Satisfaction Index recent convenience store study. Wawa won in customer service with an overall score of 82 out of 100. Where are these?
Where, Florida. I don't know.
They're huge in Florida.
Florida.
And they are the
are
thing.
They great?
They're amazing.
Is it just, can I take a guess? Is it just W-A-W-A?
Yeah,
is
yes.
that
Wawa,
what it is?
Correct.
Okay.
Wawa.
Is it better than a QT?
I love QT.
Nothing's better than a QT, Fred.
I'd be curious where Quick Trip ranks on this, actually.
Well, Quick Trip is number two.
Okay, that doesn't surprise me. A lot of people say, you know, they're both top-notch.
That's right.
I don't, honestly, and I've been to Florida quite a bit, I don't remember ever seeing one, and if I did, I don't remember it being called Wawa.
I don't either.
Which
you'd
think
that would stick.
Yeah, you'd think it would stick out, right.
Followed by, so, Quick Trip at number two, which is based in Oklahoma, followed by Buc-ee's in Texas, and Murphy USA, which is in Arkansas. So, I just didn't know what Wawa was. Thank goodness we got Ethan there to tell me what the heck it is.
I'm useful in some ways, I guess.
There is just such a difference in the quality. Like, I love the QT because they're so fast. They have friendly people that work there. You just can, you know, do your little chip if it's under $20. You don't have to worry about your PIN or anything like that. I don't understand why more convenience stores in particular, because they're supposed to be convenient, can't go to that. I told you when I was in Europe last year, and this was a result of COVID, but they were so good at just the little, what do you call that thing? Like the chip where you don't even have to put your card in. You just do a little swipey thing. And we don't do that as much over here. You have to put your damn PIN. You have to answer this question. All this. Fastlane, terrible. Come on, Fastlane. Step up your game.
You know why?
Yeah, the crowd heard it. The crowd knew.
Sure. I'm not sure that was agreement.
It's because they're more than a gas station.
That's true.
Well, I have a Fastlane right near my house that's got to be one of the worst in the area because there are nicer Fastlanes that are newer, but the one that's right there at 141 and 44 would be in the worst Fastlane Hall of Fame. Congratulations.
Well, at least you didn't insult everyone in this building. Will we get a flying shopping cart before a flying car? They've got a robotics team in the early stages of developing a pallet-trone, combination of a pallet and a drone. It hovers, it can go up and down stairs, and it's supposed to be an improvement on shopping cart that can go over any kind of terrain, and we'll see how quickly that comes out. The key here is a human has to control it. You can't just go beep, beep, beep and let it do whatever.
I can't wait till the upcoming parades where we see the Schnucks, the giant Schnucks cart.
Yes.
Flying now.
Yes.
That would be kind of cool.
Would that
actually
be awesome?
It really would.
It just goes flying up the arch steps to start down market. I love it.
I guess a floating shopping cart wouldn't have one of those wheels that goes in the wrong direction all the time.
Ka-tunk.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
And finally, in Sue's News, we have today's random fact, and this is random. The official bird of the city of Redondo Beach, California is the Goodyear blimp.
Wait, what?
That is correct.
Why?
It's California, Mark.
What
more do you need to know?
Come on. That's all you're going to give me?
Yep, that's all I got. The official bird of Redondo Beach, California is the Goodyear brand.
It had to be like created there or something. There has to be something with significance.
Look, I'm going
to
go in on that one because I don't really get that. And I used to spend some time in Redondo Beach, the Rick in Las Vegas at Rick's Resort. He used to live in Redondo. So that was like his first place out on the West Coast. We're going to do a deep dive on that and find out a little bit more on that random fact. We're coming back with Paul Morrow in a moment. Wednesday afternoon visit with Brian Kilmeade coming up after the top of the hour at 5:07. Also, Chris Klemm, former Yuma Sector Border Patrol chief, will talk about some things that happened at the debate last night and those ICE numbers showing thousands, if not hundreds or tens of thousands, at the very least, convicted murderers and rapists who illegally crossed the border that are still running free in this country. But let's go to New York City. That's where Paul Morrow is, Fox News contributor, retired NYPD inspector. He's an attorney and the founder of a great website called theopsdesk.org. We're going to talk about Eric Adams. How are you, Paul, this afternoon?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
Good. Doesn't it seem like, because so much is changing, right? We might be on the cusp of World War III. It seems like this Eric Adams thing took place like months ago, not just a week ago, because we move on so quickly. But this is a pretty big story, and you have been alluding to these, you know, indictments and charges coming for a while now when we've had these conversations. So after digesting a little bit of what happened last week, where are we with Eric Adams?
So I think that the New York City mayor is only at the beginning of his travails. There has been a lot of federal activity, legal process related to search warrants, subpoenas, people's houses being searched, documents, records being seized. Southern District of New York does not do all of that to show. So I think that there are going to be numerous other indictments. As of now, his police commissioner has stepped down. His school chancellor has stepped down. One of his closest advisors has stepped down. The city's top lawyer has stepped down because she says he wouldn't listen to her. That's the reporting. So it looks like the entire Adams administration really is across the board under federal investigation, and I expect more indictments to come.
So, you know, and I said this last week, Paul, you know, with anything that the feds are doing right now, let's face it, some of us have cast, you know, aspersion on the prosecutions of President Trump and some of these other things that have gone on. So on the one hand, I think I have to take a step back and say, OK, what's going on here with the federal prosecutors? On the other hand, it does not look good for Eric Adams, and the feds usually got you, don't they?
They do. I mean, the conviction rate for Southern District, last I heard, was well over 90%. They don't bring cases that they're going to lose. If you include plea bargains, it's like north of 95%. So that being the case, these two things that you mentioned are not necessarily mutually exclusive. Could the Biden administration have decided to move on Eric Adams because he was being fairly vocal about the depredations of the southern border on New York City? Yes. But that doesn't mean that he is clean as the driven snow here. And I think that once they decided they were going to move on him, not only did they start finding all kinds of other stuff, but they felt like, okay, we are entirely justified in bringing an indictment because they see so much fire under the smoke. But I will say that it's a strange indictment. They didn't bring the most obvious charge that would have justified this thing, which is the FARA charge, the foreign agent charge relative to Turkey. Instead, they brought it as a bribery charge. And so that maybe undercuts what I just said. It's a little amorphous. We're going to have to see where it all goes.
So, you know, you kind of focus when you wrote about this, about the campaign finance violations, and his attorney comes out and says, look, this is small potatoes. The prosecutor, the U.S. attorney, basically tries to wind in the $10 million in matching funds to, you know, highlight or outline that this is much more serious than some small potatoes with campaign finance. So what, on that front, that's where you think the more serious charge is, right?
I do, because there is a vulnerability built into the bribery charge. Like I said, they didn't go with the FARA charge, and the bribery charge opens up the door to the McDonnell case, which was a famous case regarding the governor of Virginia, where the tit for tat wasn't really clear, the quid pro quo. There has to be a tight nexus between both sides of the ledger in terms in a bribery case, and in that case, it wasn't there, and the McDonnell case got thrown out. So the bribery charges, the Adams team is hoping to get dismissed based on that. And they have a shot. But the campaign finance stuff is where the real action is. The $10 million in matching funds, if they can show that he actually directed all of this illegal bundling, then he's got real problems. And remember something, there's been a couple of moves here that really speak of, you know, a cognizance of guilt. They come to take his phones. They take his phone and his tablet, but he leaves his personal phone home conveniently. And when they ask him to deliver it, the next day he shows up and says, I changed the password. I made it a 6-number password, and just to make sure that nobody on my staff accidentally erased anything. That's the story he gave. It's right in the indictment. And then he handed the phone over, and they said, okay, what's the password? He said, oh, I just changed it. I don't remember now. That's not going to go over well with the feds. If anything, it's going to incentivize them more to get into that phone. It's going to be very difficult with a 6-number password, but that shows that there is something there to hide. I think it's likely relative to the campaign finance, and I think that's where his real trouble resides as of now.
So you're telling this is interesting to me because I think this is undercovered, if not covered at all. So you're saying that he's got his phone, he hands it over, but he says, look, I don't remember the password, and they still have the phone. They can't get into it at this point?
Yeah, that goes back a number of years. If you remember the San Bernardino case, the terrorism case with the FBI, they wanted to get into the terrorist's phone. He dropped it at the scene. And they couldn't get in, so they asked Apple to help. And
I do remember that. Yeah.
Apple said, yeah, well, they said, look, we don't care if you have a warrant. You know, we can't undercut our entire business process here, and that'll open up doors to hackers. I don't believe a lot of that. I think it's all posturing. They just don't want to have a whole legal compliance wing, which costs them money.
Yeah.
And they also want the marketing to be able to say, hey, nobody can get into our phones. And so Apple and Google, using, you know, the Android phones, Apple and Google have set up a circumstance where realistically the entire American judiciary is out of the process because they've set up an algorithm. They've set up an encrypted operating system that they themselves are incapable of breaking without taking extraordinary means, really rewriting their source code. And so they've obviated any judge in the country, because even if you have you can have a warrant from the Supreme Court, wherever, you're not getting in because they're going to say, we just can't do it.
Paul Morrow is back with us this afternoon. You know, I do this political roundtable with Paul every Friday. It's we like to consider it one of the prime pieces of real estate on the show. It's been very popular for years. And I have, you know, two people on the left and then myself and someone on the right. We have this very unusual record of, and I'm not even making this up, five people who have appeared in the last 15 years on my roundtable have gone to federal prison. They've all been politicians, as you might imagine. Two of them recently just got out of federal prison. But I mention that because in all those cases, somebody wore a wire. And in this case, it's hard for me to believe that somebody wasn't wearing a wire.
Well, first of all, let me just say I'm glad I've never been on that show because
yes,
it's
exactly.
Not a great track record. But that said, yeah, you're 100% right. This reeks of a wire because of how expansive the case has become. Looks to me like they got up on a wire. And that goes to the point I was making earlier where two things can be true. You know, they may have hit the door of his campaign finance advisor the day that he was in D.C. to meet with the White House regarding the border. That is, Eric Adams was down there. They may have been sending a message with that, but they also may have been looking to tickle the wire, as the saying goes, which is, okay, we're going to hit the door of this 25-year-old woman who's never had a job other than working for Eric Adams. So that whole thing reeks of being fugazi as well. But, you know, you do that so that she jumps on the phone and starts screaming and other people start jumping on the phone and saying inculpatory things because they don't realize that they're being listened to. The other thing that I think is a real possibility here is there's a woman called Adam Staffer in the indictment. And with a little digging, you can see who she is. And she's not named, but you can find her on the Internet. Very good chance that they got onto her early, grabbed her, put some leverage on her, flipped her, and wired her up. She may have been wearing a body wire for a lot of this.
Wow.
Now, the Adams team is not going to know this, but he may have been meeting with her, on the phone with her, directing her to do things. And she may have been recording everything he did. And if that's the case, it's going to be pretty tough for him to talk his way out of this.
Look, they all say they're not going anywhere. He's being defiant, you know, but then they go somewhere. We had a governor here. Governor Greitens wasn't going to go anywhere. He went somewhere. You got Joe Biden. He wasn't going to go anywhere unless it was an act of God. He went somewhere. So you even got AOC. Now, some of these progressives might not like Adams because he backed off on some of their agenda. But do you think he lasts this before this all goes to court?
You know, I really don't know because we don't know what they have. I was inclined to think that he could fight it out and last. He's saying he wants a fast trial and he's just banking, I'm sure, on just getting one person in a 12-person jury who will hang the jury and then he can get reelected, et cetera. But I feel the tide turning here. The more that comes out, the more his people around him resign. You know, you're really starting to hear some troubling things. And I actually do think that Hochul, May, the governor of New York, may move on him. It's her prerogative. She has the power to remove him. And currently the story goes that she's told him, and I don't know this is rumored, but the story goes that she has given him a few days. She said, I'll give you some time to think about what you want to do. Supposedly, if he cleans up his people, he gets rid of some people who are around him who may have some vulnerabilities, she might be willing to tolerate him for a while. But I think that's very thin ice. She has constituents as well. She wants to last politically. And I think that sometime over the next months, as the shoes continue to drop, I think you very well could see her force him out.
Paul, I know you wrote about, this is another topic that really deserves an entire segment, last week with this Secret Service report that came out. Josh Hawley, our center here, has been also exposing some things kind of on a parallel path with whistleblowers. But wow, that doesn't look good for the Secret Service, and there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered there, wouldn't you think?
I think the real thing right now is that, you know, to enlarge and enhance the story, that we don't have an executive. I mean, this should be told to us that Acting Director Roe is going to hit this new paradigm, the paradigm shift. He's going to change the service, et cetera. That should be coming from above him. Why should we believe him? He was the number two there, and Cheadle looks to have been completely a figurehead. So why should we take the guy who was there? Why should we take his word for it that he's going to fix it? Why didn't you fix it when you could have? We should be hearing from above him that he's the guy, and I'm skeptical that he is the guy. And we should be hearing from either Mayorkas, the vice president, or the president. Those are the three people that are above him in the chain of command and the executive. Mayorkas seems to be hiding under his desk after dropping every ball that's been handed to him.
He really is.
Kamala
yeah.
Harris is, you know, obviously just about campaigning right now and trying to rewrite her history. And our president, God bless him, you know, is still asleep. And unfortunately, you know, he's in severe decline, and nobody seems to want to admit it on his side of the fence. So we really have nobody who's controlling all of this. And I think the real story is this is what happens when you don't have a functioning executive. You get things like the Secretary of Defense going MIA for 10 days in the middle of two international wars that embroil us, Lloyd Austin. You have things like our shambolic pullout from Afghanistan. You have a border that seems to have disappeared. You have a Secret Service that's utterly rudderless and seems incapable of fixing itself to the point that we get a second assassination attempt on Donald Trump. All of this goes to not even poor leadership, lack of leadership. There's a vacuum, and it's not being filled.
You nailed it, Paul Morrow. You often do. Thank you so much for everything this afternoon. You have a great week. All right, we got Kill Me coming up after 5 o'clock. We're just a couple of days away from the Reardon Roundtable on Friday. The panel is already set. Jane will be here, Steve Butts, state representative, and Gene Evans also on the panel on Friday. We have, I guess I can tell the story this way. A couple of Saturdays ago, I was cleaning my house because, you know, Sue, I clean my house. I don't know if you know that.
Oh, yes.
I do.
You
but
are
I,
a fanatic.
I jam the music and I do my thing, right? And I'm always listening to music. And I like John Mayer's station quite a bit. He has a station on Sirius XM. So even though I'm a terrestrial radio guy, I listen to some satellite radio. And a couple of Saturdays ago, I'm cleaning the house because that's what I do. And I hear, and I've heard this before, but John Mayer comes on, he introduces a lot of songs. And he starts to rave about this guy by the name of Martin Sexton. And Martin, I know. And he's coming back to St. Louis.
Oh, that's awesome.
And, you know, he has praised Martin Sexton for many, many years, holding him up as, you know, an inspiration.
Somebody told me once before.
He's got such a great voice.
And I can see the similarity.
Go home
here.
Again.
Yeah, well, and then what you really don't hear is the similarity on guitar, because Martin is a master, master guitar player. Anyway, he is coming here to St. Louis this Sunday night, and it's a unique show. This is the Martin Sexton Abbey Road Show. So he's going to do the entire record and, you know, do some Beatles stuff, which is very unique. Last time Martin was here, he played City Winery. He also did a Break Room concert. You can find out more about this show at breakroomconcert.com. But our friend Mark Gelman, who is just mentioned by Dave Glover, I think, is on the line with us because Mark's doing a little matching fund. All these concerts that our friend John Lynch does are for charity. Hi, Mr. Gelman. How are you? By the way, I should say Shana Tova, shouldn't I?
You know what? You are on top of it, buddy. How are you?
Well, I'm 3% Ashkenazi, so, you know, I got that going for me.
We're cool. I love it. I love it. I feel like your brethren, man.
Well, so this, you know, these break room concerts, our friend John does great work with this, and they're all for charity, and Martin is one of the best. I mean, I could rank some of these artists, and they're really good, but Martin would be at the top tier. This is going to take place on Sunday night, the Abbey Road Show, Forest Hills Country Club, $50. That includes beer, wine, and cocktails. And Mark, the Gelman team's kind of coming in here for a little fundraising as well, aren't they?
We are. So as part of our core values, giving back to the community is one of our most important core values. Obviously, John's a great friend of you and I. And so he asked me, would I sponsor this show and then pick a charity? So with our breast cancer awareness this month, Susan G. Komen being such a huge, huge charity in St. Louis, I said, John, let's get Susan G. Komen involved. But here's the thing. whenever my wife and I donate money, we've taken an approach lately to have matching funds, to not only get more awareness out there, but to double our money.
Right.
So Wendy and I are sponsoring the Martin Sexton, who we're thrilled to have. We're sponsoring, Wendy and I are having a $5,000 match as part of the Gelman team. And then what's going to happen is our goal is to raise more than $5,000. We're going to match five. And then if we can get enough ticket sales, we're going to even get more money. We are hoping to get a check to Susan G. Komen for $10,000, $12,000, $15,000. I can't thank you enough for having us on, because the easiest place for them to give is through Break Room Concerts. Either go to the concert, buy your ticket there, or donate money. I just made another matching contribution. We're up to 25, so 5,000. We've donated 25, and we're at 5,000. I'm hoping to hit that 10 really quick.
Yeah, I think we can do that.
Listeners, please donate.
Well, and outside of donating, let me kind of inspire people to come to the show. I talk about these break room shows all the time, and maybe people hear and they're a little curious, but who's not a Beatles fan? And let me read a line here from the website, which says, I've been a fan of his. This is talking about Martin. I've been a fan of his for quite a bit more than a decade. It's a real pleasure to finally share the stage with him. I hope if you've never heard him before, tonight is a turning point for you. He's one of my favorite singers and songwriters. Y'all have a good time with Martin Sexton. That was the intro that Dave Matthews did for Martin. So he's that guy, you know, Mark, he's that type of guy that other really, really polished musicians and artists out there know very well, even though he's not the name that people know.
He is so incredible. Like, you're going to be blown away because you see him up there and you're like, okay, he may be good. And then he opens his voice and you are just blown away. He is amazing. It's just ridiculous. It's hard to describe without
saying. It is. I've said this, and maybe, Sue, you can have an appreciation for this. Martin Sexton uses the microphone better than most people I've ever seen.
Oh, that's neat.
And there's a skill to using a microphone as a singer, for sure, and he's really good at it. So breakroomconcerts.com, if you'd like to buy tickets, they're $50. You will have an amazing time. It's a little bit of a not a meet and greet necessarily, but it's a little cocktail hour before the show, and then the show will be like an hour and 15 minutes at Forest Hills. You have a great time. And donate some money outside of that. Mark Gelman, thank you so much for everything you're doing for this show.
Oh, my friend, I appreciate you always, and it's such an intimate setting. You will not have an opportunity to be this up and close. So thank you. Thank all the listeners. By the way, listeners, you guys have been amazing supporting us. We're selling your homes. Can't thank you enough.
TheGelmanTeam.com. Mark, I'll see you on Sunday.
Take care, all right, buddy. We'll see you then.
Take care. Go to breakroomconcerts.com. The other shows that are coming up there are really good as well. Griffin House, who is a good friend, is great. He's played the Duck Room here in St. Louis many times. He's got a strong following around the globe, actually. He's coming in for a show. And then, Sue, this is the one that I really want you to come to this one. It was something that was attempted to be executed a few weeks ago, but the show with the Everly Brothers that they're going to do. Barnaby Bright and Liz Longley, two different artists that are coming together to do Everly Brothers covers. And this was supposed to take place about a month ago, but Liz got sick. Yeah. So Barnaby Bright came in town and they did their thing, which is great, but they didn't do the Everly Brothers stuff. So that's going to be coming up in December. I think it's December 5th.
Cool.
I was having some problems going to the website here. Yeah, that one's coming up on December 5th. You could buy tickets. So it's Griffin House on Saturday, November 16th. That's for the Assistants League of St. Louis. Liz Longley, Barnaby Bright, a tribute to the Everly Brothers. That's kind of the makeup date. Thursday, December 5th at Forest Hills, and a whole bunch of different artists will come in for next year as well. If you go to the website, you'll see the past artists, and some people might know a lot of these folks because they come through, they play Del Mar Hall, the Duck Room, Off-Broadway, Old Rock House, etc. Breakroomconcerts.org. I'm very curious to hear what Brian Kilmeade has to say in the aftermath of the debate last night. Not only that, but I heard Brian on Fox talking about his radio show this morning that airs on 97.1 FM Talk. I did not get a chance to hear that, but he took a ton of calls from people, most of whom were in North Carolina, really, really desperate for help and sort of highlighting that situation. Then Chris Klum's going to join us at 5:25. He's a former Yuma Sector Border Patrol chief. We'll talk about the border exchange that happened in the Veep debate, but maybe more importantly, because this has been fact-checked, and we'll see which way Chris is going to tilt this, the ICE release of those numbers from a week ago showing tens of thousands of convicted killers and rapists who illegally crossed the border who are still here wandering the streets, and we can't keep track of them. So we'll talk about that with Chris.
Get more at 971talk.com.